You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and 3 Yards Per Carry is back. We're no longer talking about games because Dolphins are not playing in any games. So this is going to be our series where we're going to evaluate the roster as it stands right now with pending free agents and all. But as always, this show is brought to you by Factor Meals. We have a dedicated page over there, and I just finished getting my order for the week, by the way. So I am a customer. And if you go to our dedicated page, which is factormeals.com/3yardsper carry50, that's the number 3 yards per carry 50, and use the same promo code 3 yards per carry 50, you get 50% off your first order. And as always, we are also brought to you by dietsmoke.com. You can use the promo code Waddle, as in Jalen Waddle, Waddle, and you get 50% off any one item. I'm told you're a customer, Chris.
I may or may not be. I cannot confirm nor deny that I am a customer. And I would say that they do have this is verifiable. You can see it on the website. They do have a fruit and fireworks packet. And I cannot say this for certain, but I have heard that you will be probably the most detached from the planet Earth that you've probably ever been if you were to do that. So I don't know who told me that. It's, you know, some guy I probably met on the street. That's it.
Yeah. All right. So in the first part of this show, first half of the show, we're going to talk about the quarterbacks as they stand. I don't think we're going to talk too much about Skylar Thompson unless we're going to talk about replacing him. And Mike White managed to throw a pick six in garbage time this season. So I would say that the evaluation on him is universally bad on this podcast. So evidently we're going to spend the first 15 minutes or so of this podcast and the first half of the show talking about Tua Tagovailoa. And I go first, okay? And now I'm just going to open the floor, free discussion. In my opinion, this season, way too many turnovers. That's not him. He should not be having 14 interceptions. I understand that the fumbles are a different story. He got charged for a fumble, which was on a handoff to Darrington Evans. My God, if he's getting charged for that as a fumble, the NFL has to revisit how they count fumbles in this league. But 14 interceptions are way too many for him. Otherwise, he was okay. Actually, pretty damn good. He has an aversion to throwing corner routes, and I don't know why he doesn't throw them, because he delivered a dime against the Kansas City Chiefs in Frankfurt, and Tyreek Hill just dropped it. But his turnovers kind of torpedoed his season. I don't think they were going to beat the Ravens even with his best game, because 56 points is a hell of a load to handle. But that last game in against Buffalo, that's on him. That first YOLO throw was on him. And if you're going to boil down an entire season to one game, I am in that one, because that game against Buffalo, I don't really care about the one in Kansas City. Cause like I said, that game that Patrick Mahomes played in -5 degree weather might as well have been 400 yards and eight touchdowns. Okay. Because he managed to manufacture offense in what was ungodly conditions, and he's the best quarterback on the planet. So I'm not going to blame Tua too much for that game, but I can't blame him for that game in perfect conditions at home against the Buffalo Bills. And he came up short. If there's something I want him to work on your body a bit. Kind of soft body, but it helped him get through the season. I think the arrow's pointing in the right direction, but he has to work on his decision-making. 14 interceptions are way too much. And if you boil them down, I would say about 11 of them, because I went through them today, were bad decisions. And some of them were just straight-up YOLO throws against, you know, too deep, where especially the one against the Bills. Those guys were standing in the parking lot, and he's throwing a streak down the numbers against to Tyreek Hill when it's essentially going to be triple covered by the time he gets down there. So that's my evaluation of Tua. Arrow up, but plenty to work on going forward. He finished the season unlike how he started it, and that's also a concern. This fading that he's doing these last two seasons is, I'm not going to call it a trend, but it's a concern. It's something that must be addressed. What say you, Simon?
I think it's a fascinating discussion, and one that will go on until the guy retires. And I feel sorry for him that he's the center of so much attention, because a lot of it isn't on him, really, in terms of, you know, I've never really understood why he gets so much attention, whether it's the color of his skin, whether it's, you know, he's not a bad guy. He seems a wholesome, really good guy. Maybe he's... maybe the issue is that he appears in an era where there are quarterbacks like Justin Herbert, like Patrick Mahomes, like Josh, who all have big arms and are massive and physical and can, you know, do all these amazing things. And maybe that's just, you know, a bit of a knock-on effect. I mean, I saw, you know, Benjamin Solak from the Ringer did a quarterback tiering system today, and he had Trevor Lawrence in the second group, which baffles my mind. No, in the third group, sorry. Patrick Mahomes was on his own at the top. Then there was a group of three quarterbacks, one of whom was Justin Herbert. Then Joe Burrow was in the group below with Trevor Lawrence, which I found so bizarre, because imagine being, you know, bad enough at your job. Like, if I was really shit at my job every day, and yet everybody thought I was really good, that would be, you know, I like Trevor Lawrence, and I'm a huge advocate of him coming out, but, you know, he has flattered to deceive. And Tua was in the penultimate grouping alongside Daniel Jones and Derek Carr. And I just thought to myself, I just wonder what, you know, because whatever you think about Tua as a person or as a player, he doesn't really deserve to be in that grouping. What do I think of the season? I thought, you know, huge highs, and some pretty decent valleys as well. 95% of the snaps, I think we'd all have taken that. I think we'd go into year five with not as many questions as we did this time last year, or, you know, in terms of building up to the season, but certainly a number of question marks that make you concerned, I suppose. The biggest being that, for me, his best game of the season was the first game of the season. We never saw him top that, which was a shame. The issue against really good teams is, it is an issue. It's not a narrative. It's a fact. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I saw some very interesting numbers, I think, posted by Joe Shad, and you can probably find them on his Twitter. I think it was Joe, who talked about his career numbers against playoff teams, and they are not good. And even Peter King was talking about this morning. You know, franchise quarterbacks have to be better than 0-3, 57% completion rate, and a 4-5 TD to pick margin, as Tua was in his last three games. And there have been moments. And the thing I don't understand is that, you know, he was defined at Alabama by what he did in the biggest moment of all, which was, you know, coming out of that sack in overtime and throwing that touchdown to Devonta Smith to win the national championship, you know, delivering in the very biggest
and
moment.
And going blow for blow with the greatest college team ever. Remember?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And what we've not seen really as a pro is him be able to deliver those massive moments driving down the field at the end of games to win big games or to beat teams. And, you know, I felt against Buffalo when we were down 21-14 at the end that he was going to throw an interception. And that's a terrible thing to think, but that's just how it had built up. So I think there are plenty of positives. Look, he clearly works so well with Mike McDaniel. There are so many things that the offense does really well with him at the helm. You know, and I've ummed and ahed about whether or not he's the, you know, can he win a Super Bowl with him? And I'd love to think so. My heart says yes. My head says no. And I suppose I probably fall a little bit with what Daniel Jeremiah said not long after the Kansas City game. And I look at it, you know, he was bad. He was really good on script against Baltimore and then bad for the rest of the game. He was bad in Kansas City. And it wasn't just the weather. You know, there were throws that he missed. There were wide open receivers that he missed. You know, he had probably had a massive gain slash touchdown to Tavon Achane. He just threw it at his feet on a little, you know, swing. He threw into double coverage into the end zone to Tyreek when he had Jalen Waddle wide open underneath. There are so many factors to this whole question, the tree of things that we can improve on. You know, we have a Tyreek problem. We've discussed it so much on this podcast before in terms of we look for Tyreek probably too much. Mm-hmm. We need to find better options beyond Tyreek and Jalen. I think Kyle Crabbs on his podcast made a very good point today that teams always knew that we were going to throw the ball when Braxton Barrios came in because something like 79% of the times that Barrios was on the field, we threw. So we're kind of tipping our hat. And go back to Daniel Jeremiah's point, I just think that the situation for him needs to be perfect, I think, for him to win a Super Bowl. And by perfect, I mean that we probably need to surround him with better players at the skill position. So that would be, you know, a better tight end, a better number three and better number four receiver. I like the backs, and we'll get into that in the second half of the show. The interior of the offensive line needs to be better, but I also think that the Dolphins have to get home field advantage. I just don't believe that he can go on the road to Buffalo, to Baltimore, to Kansas City, where it's cold, in January and win games, because he hasn't proven that he can do that. And he's proven to me that he plays smaller when he wanted to play bigger. Generally, yes, Dallas was a great win, and he did drive him down the field at the end of the game. But that has not been the rule; that has been the exception. There is so much to like about him, and I go back. He is a likable character. Seems like a great team leader. The teammates love him. And there were so many really great, thrilling moments that he provided this season. I just, you know, you just want to see just a bit more when it really, really matters. And as yet, I just haven't seen the consistency enough in that to make me think, you know, we're coming into year five now. It's like, you've got to kind of, can he deliver at the very biggest moments? You know, he's not good out of structure. That's a concern. We've talked about this. I've talked about this on the pod. You know, the fact that he looks so jumpy and nervy when he comes off those. And people say he only makes one read, and that's nonsense. What he does often do is make one read to the side of the field that he's looking at. He makes multiple reads to the side that he's looking at. It may look like one read. It's multiple reads. I would like him more to come backside when he's front side and front side when he's backside. But there is a flip side to that in that the concussions and all those sorts of things have almost made him jumpy and nervous. He doesn't want to get hit. The ball gets out of his hand quick. That's, you know, so you kind of, there's a quid pro quo there. But, you know, there are definitely things that Mike McDaniel can do going year four to year five that he did going year three to year four and potentially deliver what we all hope and pray that he can do. I just have some concerns about what his plateau is and whether or not he's reached that. But, you know, he's definitely the guy moving forward. He definitely, you know, we shouldn't be drafting a guy. We shouldn't be trading for Kirk Cousins. He is definitely the guy. Is he the guy? That's the thing I have.
Chris?
Sorry.
I think really that he has some, let's look at the mile high view, which is that, you know, hey, this, he just completed his fourth year. You know, I think that you can point to really discrete and significant improvements that he made from his rookie year to his second year. The first year, of course, he didn't even have a training camp because of his hip, you know, didn't have a preseason because of COVID, you know, kind of thrown in there. And so it wasn't necessarily ideal. Year two, I think he made improvements, discrete and significant improvements as a passer and as a total quarterback. Still obviously not good enough, Year three, even more improvements. We're talking about a guy that was, you know, among the most potent quarterbacks in the NFL, which you have to give him some credit for that, because in the annals of NFL history, it's not like, you know, it's not like just anybody. It's not like Skylar Thompson just comes in and leads the NFL in passing. I mean, it's conspicuous when a guy does the sorts of things that Tua did in his third year. And then you had the concussions, and the hero ball really manifested, the hero ball that Nick Saban has been complaining about since Tua was, you know, a freshman there. It really manifested with those concussions, and he needed to do something about that. And so he goes into the, he goes into the lab between year three and year four, and he makes significant improvements on his playing style and overall comportment in the pocket. And he goes 18 games without missing a single one. You know, I think only a handful of quarterbacks did that this year. So significant improvements year one to two to three to four. And we haven't seen that stop yet. When we see that stop, then we start to get a little bit concerned. Mile High View, yes, you do have the significant improvement every single year. You do keep in mind he's a 25-year-old, and I don't know why we would assume that he's not going to make improvements from year four to year five. There's a lot of people out there. I see them on Twitter. I see them. There's a lot of people that will say what he will never do, and I don't know how they know that, you know, like, because – we have seen upward trend every single year. So that's the good part. The concerning parts that we're seeing are that I think there's a running theme that as we get later in the year, perhaps there's more tape on the guy. Perhaps he's playing defenses like Buffalo and Kansas City that have already seen him and that have already played him, and they have smart coaches. And they can start to figure out tendencies. Now, this is reflective both of Tua, but I think also of the Mike McDaniel offense, because there was a lack of breadth in the offense and the overall variability of it, the versatility of it, the sorts of things that they could do to attack a defense. So you start to see his tendencies taken advantage of by teams as the year goes on, as there's more tape of him in this offense this year with his tendencies. And I think, you know, and that goes all the way back to college. If you think about all the way back in college, you know, one of his proudest moments was when he had just flashed on the scene, you know, the big throws he made in the national championship game. Well, you know, there wasn't much tape on the guy back then. So I think that there is an issue with predictability, and that's what you see manifested with the interceptions. He's not the only quarterback in the history of the NFL, not even the only great quarterback in the history of the NFL that you could say this about. So there is a concern there. He's never going to be a guy, I think, especially after the concussions, he's never going to be a guy that does a lot out of structure. I think that's unfortunate. If you want that, this isn't your guy. That doesn't, you know, Tom Brady never made a lot of happen outside of structure. Peyton Manning didn't either, and neither did Drew Brees. So, this is the model of what you're going for with him. You just have to make it work, and others have. And so the Dolphins have to do that. I think you're looking at a guy. So you're looking at a guy very early in his career, even by his third, fourth year, is clearly capable of leading the league in most passing metrics, because he did. You know, I'm not just saying he's capable of it. He did it, you know, and leading one of the most potent offenses in the NFL, if not the most potent offense in the NFL. The next step, obviously, is he has to build more versatility into his approach and start breaking some of his own tendencies, particularly as the season goes on. And I think that starts with trusting the offensive line, which he was almost, I mean, after the concussion, listen, there was a time sitting here last year, we didn't even know if this guy could play football anymore, right? I mean, it was extreme. It was an extreme situation. he was up against the ropes. He's having conversations, admitted conversations with his family and his wife about whether he should even continue playing anymore. So in order to deal with this extreme situation and prove that he could continue to play football, they went for an extreme solution. They got the ball out the quickest I've ever seen, right, this year. The whole offense was designed around getting the ball out so fast, yet challenging the depths of the field so that the offensive line would not get exposed for being deficient, which they were. Let's be honest, they were. And also because his ability to keep himself, you know, to do things outside of structure while being safe about it, he's not that great of an athlete. So they had to go to extremes just to prove this guy could play football. Now I think they're going to have to dial that back this offseason. I think they're going to have to improve that offensive line. You know why you can't get from one side of the field to the other side of the field? Because you only have 2 seconds to throw the ball. You know why you can't get some of these running back dump offs in the 1 to 5 yard area, you know, beyond the line of scrimmage? Because you can't hold the ball longer than 2 seconds, you know? And I think that was drilled into him so bad or so much this season. And it was such an extreme thing that they got trapped by it. They really got trapped by it at the end. And then at that point, it doesn't even matter whether the offensive line is giving up the pressure or getting beaten or not, because the quarterback is assuming so. And the system is assuming so. The timing that is being built into the system is assuming that and compensating for that, whether it's actually happening or not. So now what they need to do is build the offensive line so that they can trust it more. And if they can trust it more, and if he can trust it more, then you can start to build in a little bit more variability in the passing game. And then maybe things won't get so predictable late in the year. Maybe you won't be caught in these situations where, God, how come nothing that used to work is working anymore? You know, like, and that's what I think needs to happen with him. And it's inextricably tied to the system itself and Mike McDaniel's coaching of it. And it's almost, you cannot talk about one without the other at this point. And so that's the next steps, many next steps. I don't know what he'll never be or what he'll ever be. I mean, we're yet to see it. But, you know, clearly not good enough, because at the end of the day, this is a make or miss league. And at the end of the season, when you're in the playoffs, you didn't make, and it's done. The season's done as a result. So, you know, that's it.
Yeah, I think you alluded to what he can improve going into next season. I'm not sure if I got that from Simon, so I'll want it here before we go to break and talk running backs. Simon, what does he need to improve going into next season?
To me, I think that Mike McDaniel has to do a little bit of reconfiguring of the offensive concepts, certainly in the pass game, you know, build around what they do well. But I think the structure has to be set up better to make it easier for him to work through progressions. He can't be as jumpy as he patently gets when teams essentially shut down a side of the field that he's looking to throw to me, that's an issue that helps him, you know. And Chris makes the point, you know, the offensive line, and certainly the interior of the offensive line, needs to be significantly better. And, you know, the injuries to Robert Hunt and to Connor Williams especially don't help, you know. So we need to make sure that Hunt is re-signed, and that certainly those, you know, whether it's Connor or it's a new center via free agency or the draft, and the same with the left guard, have to be better. I can't excuse him. Chris talked about, you know, the offensive line has to be better to hit some of those, you know, little screen passes to running backs. I can't excuse him not being able to do that. That you know, and I talk about the Chiefs game is the perfect example. That was just on him, not on the offensive line. I know Chris wasn't alluding to that play specifically, but so I think those are some of the things that need to happen. They were just inexcusable is the wrong word. They were just, you know, it's not like he's doing it on purpose. There were just plays that you just, you know, there were so many great plays. Let's be clear. There were so many great plays, so many great throws, so many great moments. And for 90% of this past season, I know the three of us hadn't, and I think I probably speak for 99% of Dolphins fans, that we had a completely joyous time, and he was at the heart of it because, you know, when the offense was clicking, it was unbelievable to watch. We haven't had this since prime Marino, and, you know, that's not hyperbole, that is fact. But I just think I would like to see McDaniel, you know, work a little bit on some of those structures of the passing concepts, and so that Tua doesn't have to feel like he has to, you know, make the throw to his to the number one target on that particular pass play every single time, if that's what, you know, goes through his mind. And I don't know that it is, because, you know, we don't have the ability to sit down and talk to him about it. But, you know, I would like to see that. I would like to see less of the jitters. Chris talked about his inability to, or, you know, I talked about his inability to play out of structure, and Chris said that, you know, he's not sure that's ever going to be a thing, and I'm not sure it's ever going to be a thing. It's never been something necessarily that he's been entirely comfortable with in the NFL. There have been times against Arizona, against the Jets, where he ran over Michael Carter. You know, you go back to college, you know, the touchdown against Vanderbilt, when he did a, you know, ran around in circles and drew a touchdown in the air. You know, that was part of his game. But I just think the longevity of his career and his life. You know, let's not forget that when he had that concussion against Green Bay, he was advised in that period of time where he was contemplating what he should do with the rest of his life, he was advised to not really do anything football related or sport related or activity related for 8 weeks, 2 months of his life, you know, so that his brain could heal properly. You know, he's a 25-year-old man. That is a big deal, you know, so expecting him to, you know, and it must be difficult for him at times to rein in that, you know, need to go and just run someone over, like he, you know, like we know that he likes to do. He does like to put his head down and run over people and shake his shoulders and do that sort of thing. He can't do that anymore, you know, and that will always be an issue. He's never going to be Josh Allen in terms of getting out of the pocket. He's never going to be Kyler Murray. He's never going to be Justin Herbert in terms of being able to do that. I just think we need to accommodate and continue to build on all the great stuff that he does well, but just make sure that, you know, when he has to come backside, when he has to, you know, do some of the things that he just can't quite get to do, that we can continue to build on that. I hope he hasn't plateaued. And Chris made a very good point about, you know, the year-on-year-on-year, you know, improvements. And there have been. This year was a massive jump. But can he get to that final point and really become the quarterback that we all hope he is, and ultimately take the Dolphins to the promised land? We've got to win a playoff game. He's got to win a playoff game. And the narrative of not winning games against big teams will remain that until he does it, because he hasn't done it. And, you know, that's the thing. Win a playoff game. Win two playoff games. Get home field advantage, you know, and then let's see what we're dealing with. And if at that point, you know, we can't, you know, if we go out of the first round or the second round, if we've got home field advantage, we go out in the, you know, in the divisional round first game, he doesn't beat anybody, then again, it's a question, it's an issue. It's a, you know, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? But he's definitely earned the right to have next season. Absolutely. The contract is probably a question for another show, but we, you know, I think all of us that care about the Miami Dolphins are hopeful that he is the guy that can do it. I think it's okay to have some reservations about whether or not that will happen. And we'll, you know, we'll see what the draft and free agency brings in terms of helping him out.
All right. And there you have it. And when we come back after this brief break, we will talk about the running backs. But first, these words.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so Premier Kitchen, Bath, and Laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at WCUFL.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 5-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
And we're back. And we were talking during the break that I give very, very short thrift to Skylar Thompson and Mike White. I actually dismissed them in the first 30 seconds of our whole quarterback discussion, as Mike White managed to throw a pick six in garbage time and Skylar Thompson never played. And I was kind of glad he never played. But I guess we should address it. I'll go to you first, Chris. Mike White, Skylar Thompson, go.
I think that we can't necessarily give it short shrift because, you know, we should not forget that Tua still has an injury history. And so at any given point in the season, we're going to find ourselves in that situation. Any given season, any given point in the season. So I guess the value I would place on those two quarterbacks is not so much value that we've seen on the field, because we've rarely seen them on the field, right? But think of the sweat equity that they've given and put into Skylar Thompson at this point in terms of 2 years of development. The fact that he started the playoff game in Buffalo, and, you know, even though he was not necessarily good in that game, they very nearly won it. And so I think that with that sweat equity, like, listen, if you're just tossing him, then what were those 2 years for? You know, that's kind of the question that I would have. And so Skylar Thompson, I would think moving forward, because Mike White is a little bit of a veteran and would make more money, you know, that's a compelling option. This is a team that is hard up against the cap. We'll talk about that in other shows, but, so I do have to say, this is a possibility. Skylar Thompson, the thing that seemed like it was holding him back was the overall command of the offense, command of the huddle, command of all the motions, the play calls, you know, everything. And hopefully that'll improve.
Simon?
Yeah, I think, look, you know, the best Mike White is the guy that directs the White or writes the White Lotus. Let's be clear on that. But Mike White is important, and he's important to discuss because of everything that Chris said. You know, Tua does have an injury history. And if he goes down, this team is built to, you know, do good things, win playoff games. And you need somebody to be able to do that. And there aren't enough good quarterbacks in the league. So get yourself as good a backup as is humanly possible. Yeah, he threw a pick six in garbage time. But actually, I think that if he was to take control of the offense for 3-4 weeks, I think we'd be absolutely fine. We could probably maneuver ourselves through the season. I just think you kind of need that guy. People say, oh, he's paid $5.2 million. I would take the $5.2 million knowing that we had somebody of his ilk who could step in should we need it. Another great point by Chris on Skylar Thompson. I think they like him. You know, they like the arm talent. You know, is he going to be, you know, somebody that is going to win multiple games in this league? Probably not. But, you know, you don't spend all that time developing somebody and then just kick him to the curb. Will they draft somebody else to replace him potentially? And I don't see the problem with drafting a quarterback every year later on to take a chance on a guy to develop. And that's clearly what they're doing with Skylar. I think it's a good plan. We haven't really done that historically as a team, but I do think that making sure that quarterback room is right is really, really important. It's important not only for team chemistry, and you only had to see on Hard Knocks how important the chemistry was between those guys, but also knowing that if number one goes down, that we have somebody competent enough to run the offense in the, you know, worst case scenario.
Yeah, and that was obvious watching Hard Knocks that group is pretty tight.
Very tight.
Yeah, and in fact, I love to see the video of their golf championship that they're going to have, you know?
Yeah. with their isotoners.
Yes. Oddly enough, that was the last game that they won. What was that one against the Cowboys that they were talking about doing their golf challenge thereafter? My money's on Tua. Like, he's really improved as a golfer. So, and that's not just him talking about it, because he likes to talk up his game, which is always a terrible sign of a terrible golfer. You know, if you hear a guy talking about how great they're hitting the ball, they're not very good. But the spy reports seem to suggest that Tua's a hell of a golfer. All right, moving on to the running backs. I absolutely love this room. I love everything about it. I love everybody in it. Okay. I even like Darrington Evans a little bit, but I know he won't be here next year. Savon Ahmed is, I guess, the lowest man on this totem pole. And I'm fond of saying that Savon Ahmed has never had a bad moment. Sure enough, he had one at the end of his tenure here this year. But that was it. You know, other than that, he's been a steady performer. If he's playing, then a lot better players before him went down. I like everybody in front of him. I like Jeff Wilson. He even had his moment against the Dallas Cowboys. Devon Achan is, in my opinion, going to be a star. He needs to get in that weight room, get to somewhere around 195 pounds. And he can, because he weighed 188 at camp when he showed up at camp. And that's before he started losing some weight. So if he was feeling dangerous and he was feeling fast at 188, I wonder what he played the season as at. While, you know, it wasn't as hot and he wasn't out there in that temperature. Maybe he played at somewhere near 190. If that's the case, he doesn't have too far to go. Get in that weight room, gain those 5 pounds, gain those 10 pounds if need be. My one concern is on our best player in the room, and that's Raheem Mostert. This is now a trend. This is two seasons in a row. He finishes the season nicked up. He was essentially a mess, and he was playing on guts and guts alone against the Chiefs. He actually played well. If you look at some of his runs, he was making correct cuts, playing with power, with leverage. And maybe he didn't, you know, he wasn't the 4-3 guy, but he was like a 4-5 guy. But it's 2 years, and he's just getting older. He did work on his body. He got heavier. I think he needs help. And in a later show, I'm going to talk about giving him some very big help. as in a very large human being, to share carries with him and lower the load on Raheem Mostert. He is under contract next season, so for those that are wondering, and at a cheap number. And, you know, this team is going to need good football players at cheap numbers. And Raheem Mostert is absolutely that. Your take, and I'll go with you, Simon, first. Your take on this running back room.
Yeah, I generally share your sentiments. I think Mostert is great. I thought he bulked up to around 215. And, you know, his injury was unfortunate because of how it happened and, you know, and when it happened. I think Achane is, you know, fantastic, used the way he is. He's never going to be a 300 carry a season guy. And I think, you know, that the probably 150 mark is probably his, you know, because you just want to keep him healthy and you do worry about.
Yeah, you got to get creative with putting the ball in his hands. That's all you got to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think you kind of mix up how you do that. I like Chris Brooks. I think the team quite likes Chris Brooks, but, you know, again, this is for another podcast, but the issues that we have in short yardage are an issue. And I do think that we need a bigger back, you know, and I do think sometimes we just need to punch someone in the mouth. We have one of the best two or three fullbacks in the league, you know, and Alec Ingold will never get the love that he deserves, but he is a tremendous player.
Pro Bowl starter, yeah, Alec Ingold.
Absolutely. Along with Kyle Juszczyk and Patrick Ricard, I think they're the best three fullbacks in the league, and it's not even close. And, you know, he's so consistent. But I kind of feel like we need a bigger back. And, you know, I'm doing draft stuff. And last night I was looking at Audric Estime of Notre Dame. And when I see a guy who's 227 pounds, he just comes in and punches somebody in the mouth and, you know, never goes down on first contact. And I'm not saying we should be drafting Estime, but I'm just saying somebody like that who can convert third and ones and fourth and ones, you know, who can just pick up some tough, dirty yards, who in the fourth quarter of big games when teams are stacking the box and, you know, you can just take a little bit of the pressure off, because sometimes in games it kind of feels like the Dolphins aren't able to do that. Jeff Wilson did that in the Dallas game, as you alluded to, Alf, which was hugely important. I like Jeff Wilson too. I like Ahmed. I think Darrington Evans obviously won't be back. I kind of feel like there is space for somebody. People have talked about Derrick Henry. I don't see that happening. Mike McDaniel's history would tell you that, you know, I'd expect an Alfred Morris type over a Derrick Henry type. Whether that comes in free agency or the draft remains to be seen. They probably won't touch the room, quite frankly, given the season that they all had. You just kind of feel like, much as I talked about diversity of passing structure, passing concepts, somebody just needs to go back and give Mike the tape of the last 2 years of short yardage situations and just has to shake him and say, dude, just, you know, line up, eye formation, let's just smack some people in the face and pick up that half a yard. So I like the room. I think it's great. It's diverse. They've got great hands. They can pass protect. They've got incredible speed, wiggle. Achane is a star, but he's got to stay healthy because, you know, if you lose him for significant periods of time, then Chris, we would be in trouble. But, you know, it's a good room.
Absolutely. Chris?
Sorry about the delay there. I'm in the midst of cooking my daughter dinner. no, I think that if you look at the room they have, I'm trying very hard, and it is hard sometimes because we saw insufficiencies or deficiencies in the way that that they approached many things in the ground game this year, in terms of, you know, not running enough. I think we all kind of wanted there to be more, to be more commitment, not running in short yardage situations, not getting downhill at times, even just as a change of pace. And where I have to school myself a little bit is don't mistake the lack of variability and the lack of smart decision-making in the approach with the lack of variability and versatility in the room itself. They had Chris Brooks. They could have run him in short yardage. They didn't. They had Jeff Wilson, who punches above his weight class. And they could have used him in short yardage situations. They didn't. Okay. They had Raheem Mostert and Devon Achane, guys that can do wonders with the ball in their hands, throwing them the football. And they could have featured them more in the passing attack, particularly as teams started to pull back their linebackers into deeper portions of the field and still stay in cover two. And they could have done that. They could have done the classic cover two beaters with their running backs. You know what? They didn't. And the question is that really because of in deficiencies in the running back room? Or was that just their approach? And was that Tua's decision making? You know, that's the question. Those are the sorts of things that we have to tackle and address in the offseason. I don't think the room is deficient. I think that Chris Brooks could do damage in short yardage. I think that Jeff Wilson could do damage in short yardage. I think that Devon Achan and Raheem Mostert are perfect for catching passes out of the backfield and using their speed to really victimize linebackers that are in backup mode, that are bolting to their landmarks, their deep landmarks right off the snap. So they need a new approach. I don't necessarily know that they need a new running back. Now, that said, listen, we know that every running back with a name under the sun, if there was a rumor that he was available, the Miami Dolphins called about it, okay? They called about Jonathan Taylor. They called about Saquon Barkley. They called about Josh Jacobs. They inquired after Dalvin Cook. They inquired after, Jamir. There was all kinds of rumors about Mike McDaniel being absolutely in love with Jahmyr Gibbs in the draft. And he was a first rounder. We didn't even have a first round pick. Mm-hmm. Every running back under the sun, there was clearly a theme there. If you had a name, the Dolphins were after you. And so I think that, if we have a little bit of a reality check moment, even though I don't think there are any deficiencies in the room, I think they had great talent, great variability, versatility, and we just didn't use it. Do they share that belief? Do they go after a Saquon Barkley? Do they go after a Derrick Henry? I still have my doubts unless it's a true, bargain level contract. But at the same time, the past is a good indicator of the future sometimes. And so we'll see.
Yeah. Simon, I'm going to do something that I love doing, which is called reading from the game book. And I'm going to ask you this question. Maybe there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with this room, and you could bring it all back intact, right down to Savon Ahmed, as long as there's a change in mindset from this coaching staff. Because I'm going to read something that just really bothers me. The score becomes 13-7 in that playoff game against the Chiefs. We know about the weather. We know how it was. They get a good return out to the 35. And then this is what the game book reads. Mostert left end to eight for 8 yards. Mostert left end for 4 yards. Mostert up the middle for 3 yards. Mostert up the middle for 6 yards. Timeout. It's 3rd-and-1. Tua Tagovailoa, pass incomplete. 4th-and-1. Tua Tagovailoa, pass incomplete. Turnover on downs at the Kansas City 44-yard line. Is it just a mindset change? And instead of being, I believe they were, 15th in carries, be top 10. Be top 5. Run the ball more. Is it as simple as that? Buffalo seemed to have... Look, Buffalo has a much better quarterback than we do. Okay, I think that's fair to say. Josh Allen's a stud. And people think that Josh Allen just dragged this team to the divisional round and went 7-1 down the stretch because he was just lighting everybody on fire. No, he was not. There's a lot of 200-yard passing games in there. He won a game by 20 points where he threw 90 for 91 yards. Okay? They did it by getting behind that offensive line and running the football. It was a mindset change that Joe Brady instituted. Is it as simple as that, Simon?
It is. To me, it absolutely is. To me, it is. Mike McDaniel is always the smartest guy in the room, almost without exception, and rightfully so generally. I just think he overthinks and outthinks himself in critical moments. And what I have liked about McDaniel is that he generally has accepted his problems and his foibles and some of his mistakes since he's been here, and he's adjusted them. And that's what I would like to see next season. I just think, like you say, it's simply a case of almost losing control of the big moment and trying to think that teams are going to be expecting a run. They're not going to be expecting a screen or a fade or a whatever it is that he calls, and just go back to the things that, you know, the things that have worked for so long, the things that we know that can work. And yeah, that's what I'd be doing. And that I would hope that there are smart people in the room in the off season who say, Mike, you know, this is what we need to be doing more of.
Chris, you
know, just something on that. I think you cannot talk about the lack of commitment to the ground game toward the end of the year without talking about the issues on third down. And I know that we kind of sometimes tie in the third and short issues with the lack of commitment to the ground game, because, you know, there are third downs that we've seen where we would have run it, you know, we would have downhill run it, and they clearly did not. But when you convert, I think it was something like 2 out of 24 third downs in the last two games of the season, the most, you know, pivotal games of the season against Buffalo at home and then on the road in Kansas City, then you can't run the ball. You, I mean, you just can't. The math doesn't work. You know, it's you're getting off the field too much. There's not enough situations for you to actually start establishing that run, to get into a rhythm, and do things that way. So this is inextricably tied to the third down problem, and the third down, particularly, I think, third and short, third and medium, and then third and long started to show its head at the end of the year, because now you're holding the football a little bit longer, and now it's like, well, do you have a real offensive line, or did you have an offensive line whose lack of abilities you were masking by through quick passing? So, you know, you can't really run the ball if you can't convert those third downs. And a lot of those games toward the end of the year where we're like, why don't you just run the ball? Why don't you just run the ball? A lot of that was just impossible. So I think that they're tied together, and so it's not necessarily just about commitment to the run, because I think that Mike McDaniel at a certain point in the season did try to find a religion, but then he found that third down was getting cut right out from under him. They were no longer able to convert those third downs, and they really need to discover the why of that. And they need to work on it. If that is the thing that they're going to be, that Mike McDaniel, that I know that Mike McDaniel is going to go in the lab and truly bang his head against the wall trying to figure out for months this season, this offseason, I know that it is going to be third down. So, you know, those two things are tied together.
All right, Simon, let's get to the point where we start talking about how do we improve these guys from this offseason going into next season. There's going to be time to talk about whether we can save money with Jeff Wilson with a mere promotion, by cutting Jeff Wilson, with a mere promotion of Chris Brooks into his role. But I would say that the biggest improvement that they can make in this room is to get Devon Achane with a good long offseason with Tua Tagovailoa to try to get some chemistry in the passing game, because once that starts clicking, and look, this is something that I saw in camp, and they tried to incorporate it, and they had the very famous near miss against the Tennessee Titans. That could have gone for a big one. That could have changed that whole game. And of course, he beat his man way off the line on that long touchdown from Tua to Tyreek against the Commanders. So there were opportunities with him split out wide. But in camp, I saw him running a lot of wheel routes and a lot of choice routes. Some of the stuff that they incorporated very late in the season, Tua never seemed to have a good chemistry with him. And I think that should be project number one for those two guys. Like, Devon Achane should be on Tua's hip this offseason. And whenever Tua's working out, he should be out there throwing at Devon Achane. They got to get a little bit more chemistry together. I think that's how you improve this room, is to improve on the skill set that Devon Achane has. What say you, Simon?
To me, it's improve the offensive line. And I think that speaks to every aspect of this offense and what we're trying to do, improve the offensive line, and we go from there. Yes, Achane can work with Tua, he can add weight, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But until this offensive line gets better, I don't think that this team can get to the place that it wants to go to, because it's intrinsically linked to everything that we're trying to do. And that has to start with the guys up front. Has to.
All right, and I think we could end it right here. Chris, how do you improve? How do you improve from within in this running back room?
Simon stole it. It really
Sorry.
is. It really is about the offensive line. If you want more versatility in your
By
and
the way, sight
variability in your
unseen,
approach.
because we haven't gotten into anybody else. It's safe to say that this is our favorite unit on the team, right? Because all three of us are giving rave reviews to all these guys, right?
What, the running backs? Absolutely.
It's our best unit. Yeah, I tend to agree.
Well, I mean, I don't know about the whole team, but I mean, it's a good group. Once Mike McDaniel said when he got into the Miami, and he told this to Mike Silver in this big, long, very revealing interview, that the personnel department, when he first got there, they're meeting and they really wanted to focus all their resources into an overhaul of the offensive line unit. And Mike McDaniel disagreed with them, but he didn't want to just like stand up and say you're wrong. So he created this, drafted this 25-minute video of Tua doing things, and showed it to them, to with the point being, I want playmakers. Well, they've focused on getting those playmakers, and those playmakers include the running backs unit. So we shouldn't be surprised at this point that they've built a pretty good room from a running back standpoint. But I think now they need, now it is time, and it's probably not helpful for us to like start like litigating history and say, well, what should they have done? They should have done this different or that different. I just know that right now it is time. It is time to start addressing this offensive line in a real way, because their lack of variability in their approach was an issue. And if your lack of variability in your approach is an issue, then you need to improve the areas that naturally and inherently feed into that variability. And one of those is the offensive line, the other is the tight ends unit, because those are the inherently versatile aspect and variable aspects of your offense. So you can't get a downhill running game going. Okay, build an offensive line that can get a downhill running game going. You can't call runs on third and short, or you don't think you can. Okay, get an offensive line that lets you use Chris Brooks in that manner. That's what they have to do. That is absolutely what they need to work on next. They need to improve it. And I'll leave you with this. Over the last 5 years or so, if you track these sorts of things, quarterbacks generally, the same quarterbacks playing in the playoffs that played in the regular season, they generally take, a tenth of a second or more to throw the football than they did during the regular season. That's the playoffs. That's the way the playoffs work out. And I think that if you really track that from like September to October to November to December, it would just get longer and longer and longer. The Miami Dolphins were not built to do that. They were not built to increase the amount of time that they took. And I don't just mean from a personnel standpoint, although that is true. I mean from an everything that they had developed strategically and schematically, they were not built to do that. They were not built to take that extra time. And I think that that's why they're going to keep banging their heads against the wall in December and January, unless they address that. And one of the ways that you do that is by improving the offensive line. You improve the offensive line, then you have more variability in your approach, and all of a sudden you can use those running backs in all those different ways that we talked about. All
How would
the
you do
running backs that we like so much,
that then, Chris? How would GM Chris Kaufman change the offer? What would you do?
The offensive line?
What would you, if you put yourself in Chris Greer's shoes, what are
Sure.
you doing given our cap situation, the draft picks that we have, no third, no fourth rounder, what would you do? Who would you bring in? Where what would your starting offensive line be for week one of next season?
Well, there's a couple of things that I wish I did know and I don't, because one, I don't know what Teron Armstead is going to do in terms of retirement or not retirement. Even if he is
Let's
not
to make it
retiring,
easier,
I
let's
might
operate
escort him
it.
out.
To make it easier, let's operate under the assumption that he wants to play.
He wants to play. I think even if he wants to play, I would probably
cut him and move on. I think that there's too much instability in guys that you can't count on to be there from game to game and from play to play. And he's one of them, and he's playing on, you know, on a body that's held together with tape and glue. And so you can't count on that stability. I think it starts with the center at quarterback exchange, though. And so a decision has to be made about whether Connor Williams is, I don't know if there's something behind the scenes about his character or his comportment within the locker room that bugs them, or if he is just, you know, a great guy. If he's a great guy and you just want to plug your name next to him, okay, do it. Put your name next to him, pay him the money, get that quarterback center exchange, you know, protected and stable, and start there. Then you build out, and that's where I think you're just going to have to spend resources in the draft to do it. Because even if these guys are not, you know, right away in September, what you need them to be September and October, by December, they can be, you know, you get that improvement from the offensive line. So yes, if you're not going with Connor Williams, then you should be looking at, what's his name? JPJ from Oregon,
Jackson.
Yeah. Okay. Did I say Jackson twice? Then you need to go with him, because not only is he a good center, but he adds an element to the offense because he's so big and so strong that you don't necessarily already have. And now you can start to get some downhill runs going, some inside ground game going. I think it's about adding elements to the offense. And so getting some guys that kind of break your own mold for how you think it should all be, it is kind of the point. You know, you have to do that. And so I think that would be a smart move. You could even justify that if you keep Connor Williams, because you can put one of them at left guard, and keeping Robert Hunt is obviously going to be a priority for this team as well. But I think that, you know, between him and a guy like Troy Fautanu of Washington, or even Jordan Morgan, you know, Jordan Morgan of Arizona is a really athletic, big, strong guy. He's very technical in nature. And I think that he could present, you know, value to the team in multiple facets. And that's really what it gets down to at the end of the day, is getting guys that present value to you in multiple ways, so that you can start to call some things differently or game plan a little bit differently if that's what it calls for this week. There wasn't enough of that in this year in their approach to each week.
All right. And I think we're going to call it right there. The next time we talk to you will be later on this week, and we're going to talk about wide receivers and tight ends. I hope you enjoyed this first installment of our roster review. We did this last year. We're doing it again this year. Later on this week, wide receivers and tight ends. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.